Let's make it happen, Captain.
From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
I'm Gov Maharaj.
Welcome to Defrag. So, we're back.
It's been a while. We've had some massive schedule conflicts.
We have. You cancel, I cancel, I cancel, you cancel, studio cancels. So, we're back. And out of all the mail that we got in the last few weeks, too, everyone's saying, I wish you'd do more shows.
I wish you'd do shows. We want to.
I would love to. Believe me, I would love to. Had Tech Ed Europe, got up at 5 this morning for the Visual Studio Connect event. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on. We've had a lot of live events and a lot of
stuff
for you.
I'm doing 14-hour days, and I need to spend, you know, half an hour with my kid at home when I get home.
Yeah, that's always
before
nice.
She goes to bed.
Yeah. But where are we at? Previously on Defrag. What were we doing? I don't know. But we'll get to your mail here in a minute. Let's talk stuff.
Headphones.
Show me these headphones you got.
So, you know, it's not supposed to be a product placement or anything like that. I'm not even going to tell you who makes them.
But we will link to them in the show notes in case someone wants them.
They're cheap Bluetooth headphones.
Well, there you go.
I've had headphones for many, many years, the wired kind. I get them tangled, I get them torn, I get them bunched up, you know, I'm getting off the bus, I take the bus, and I stuff them in my pocket, I pull them out, the earbud thingy on them falls out, lose them forever.
Major problem.
The giant headphones over the ear, DJ headphones, I've got sets of those, but they don't travel well, you know, they're big, they're bulky.
They use batteries,
or, you know, they're corded as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, don't get me wrong, corded headphones, they definitely have their place, but when you're traveling, you're on a bus, you're throwing your backpack over your shoulder, over your head, and then it gets caught, and then you get pulled off. I finally made the switch to Bluetooth, and I've been, you know, hunting forever to find a half decent pair of Bluetooth headphones that are small, they're portable. I won't lose these versus, you know, you've seen the tiny earbud Bluetooth ones where you snag them and then they're gone. I just leave these around my neck all day. They're foldable. They charge with micro USB directly.
Yeah,
no special cables. I love that. One really cool aspect of these is they will connect to two devices at the same time.
Yeah.
So I've got this paired to my laptop, my Surface, and my phone. So a great thing is I can be watching a movie on the bus, which I regularly do. Mm-hmm. I want to unwind a little bit.
Yeah.
And if a call comes in on my phone, it just automatically picks it up and I can start talking. It'll pause the movie and, you know, just seamlessly transfer.
Nice.
Which is just great. And best part, these were $30.
Wow. Right?
They're, all right. The battery lasts something like 10, 12 hours before a charge, so mm-hmm. I can go multiple days watching movies. Clarity is awesome. They're not earbuds, so they don't go poking into my ear. They just sit nicely over top. And I just have these sit on my neck all day.
Nice. All right, quit selling. I'm buying. Sold. So my thing with earbuds is I'll pull the earbud out, and mm-hmm. then the end of it, the like foamy part, mm-hmm. is stuck in my ear. And more than a dozen times, I've had to get some tweezers mm-hmm. and try to extract this thing out of my ear canal, which is a little terrifying.
How hard are you shoving them in your ear, dude?
You know, you need to be able to hear, but so
The instruction on Q-tips?
I don't follow many instructions, period.
When you can see the Q-tip, you've gone too far.
Yeah, all right. So there's that. Now, the other thing you were talking about, bags and corded headphones. Mm-hmm. You know, most backpacks, they have the little hole on there that you can run your headphones through, right? You ever see those?
Yeah, but then you pull off your backpack and they rip out of your head.
That's why that's the worst invention ever. But I'm so fascinated by that. I want to know who invented that, because they're probably filthy rich. They probably have made millions off licensing a little hole through a bag that you poke your headphones through that no one ever uses. So if anyone knows who that person is who's reaping the money off of that, I would love to know what that is. It's going to be like the most fascinating story in Wired someday. So, All right. So what I get, I got my new electric bike. I talked about it a bunch of times.
We've got a picture of that.
A picture of it. Yeah, that's it. So I had it custom made from High Power Cycles. It's a little different from stock. You can see I got a huge battery hanging off the frame up there.
This right here is the battery.
Yeah, there's a lot of battery there. And I went with a mid-drive rather than having the motor in the hub, because the hills around here, there's one hill by my house where it's 500 feet in less than a mile. And so it's just about straight up. And this will crank right up that, no problem. So that's why I got that. And the part on the back, that's for a child. That pay no attention to that. He has a lot of fun. But the bike itself, on flat ground, it adds, I've got another picture, I don't know if you have it, but it adds about 32 miles per hour to whatever I'm doing. So I've been up to 50 on it, which is a little... Not with the kid on the back,
right? Sure,
but yeah.
Do you wear a helmet or?
I always wear a helmet.
Yeah, I'm thinking of at those speeds, a helmet is more of an accessory as opposed to protection.
I've gone over the front of it already, and so now I not only do I wear a helmet, I wear a Joe Rocket motorcycle jacket.
Oh, okay.
So I wear a fully padded jacket. I look like a complete idiot on the thing.
You know, you should get the...
I have to.
The inflatable motorcycle jackets.
Yeah.
So yeah. You just turn into a giant Stay Puft Marshmallow Man and you get
Michelin
ejected.
Man when I go flying off, which has happened. But yeah, so that's that. All right, and I got it just in time to store it for the winter, which is great.
Right.
I've gotten to ride it like twice, so that is awesome. All right, let's get started with the questions. From Andre, when I call get product info, it returns 101, define product core and a string, which stands for the normal core edition instead of 111 for Windows 8.1 with Bing.
So
what's going on here, Gov?
To recap the question, person is trying to call get product info. Get product info, what it does is it tells you the SKU in which you are on.
Yeah.
Now, we add new SKUs all the time. Mm-hmm. The thing with somebody asking, okay, get product info, tell me what my SKU is. Tell me what I'm running on. If you ask that question, and then, you're a legacy application, and you ask that same question 5 years later, you might actually be running on something that you weren't expecting. So what we do with this API is we basically map back to an expected SKU that would have been available at the time that you passed, that you could have asked this question. So the way that you ask this API, what SKU am I, is that you have to pass in a version number in which to map to. So if you call get product info and when you wrote your software, all you knew about was Vista, for example. Yeah. You'd pass in, OS major version 6, minor is 0, service pack major version is 0, minor version is 0, and then you get back a DWORD type that would map back to one of these products. Mm-hmm. And you'll notice that on some of these, for example, product core, that got introduced in Windows 8.
Yeah.
So if you were running on Windows 8 at the time, and you called this API with the 6000 version string, you would not get back product core. You'd get back something that would have mapped back to product core, more than likely a home or starter SKU. Mm-hmm. The mappings are not listed in this MSDN article, unfortunately. Now, the problem that was happening here is the SKU with Bing only got introduced with Windows 8.1 S14, I believe.
Yeah.
It didn't even get introduced with 8.1. So when he was calling this API, he was calling it with 6.3.0.0. So that SKU didn't exist at the time. It got mapped back to a different one. And so that's why he had that issue. He actually had to call that API with 6.3.0.1 in order to get back the correct SKU version.
Yeah.
So if you're asking this question, you kind of have to understand why it is that you're asking this question. If you're doing it to say, hey, I work only on particular editions, then what you really need to do is go back to the most basic edition. So basically, it'll be core, professional, enterprise, home. Those are the ones that will really dictate differences in available features.
Yeah.
And if you get, if you're running on something else that maps back to your parent SKU is what we would call it, that's okay. You shouldn't care because all of your features that you are looking for is still available, which is why we do it in this particular method. It's a it's a method of version clamping, essentially.
Okay. All right. Next question. Why were the support links changed to http://support2.microsoft.com/kb/number? This causes an issue when you click in the details of the installed updates under Windows Update. There's still old links without the two. Clicking on this link causes a service not available message for me. By the way, when will we see a new show on Channel 9? Right now.
Why the URL changed, I believe, was for scaling issues. And the problems with the links are going to resolve themselves later on as soon as everything gets synced up properly.
Okay.
We had some infrastructure issues, but really, you know, if the main link doesn't work, add the two to it and that should work.
Okay, cool. From Rod, tonight I was trying to do some software development on my laptop. I had Visual Studio 2013 up and writing some. I also had IE and Notepad++ up. Normally I'd do an Alt-Tab to go from one program to the other, but that didn't work tonight. VS 2013 insisted it must be on top of everything, period. Even if I went to the taskbar and clicked on anything else, Visual Studio forced itself to be on top. The only way I could get around this was to minimize Visual Studio. Why does Windows do this sometimes? I'm using Windows 8.1 Pro. I've seen this, not with Visual Studio, but I've seen this once or twice in the past. What might cause something like that?
Well, Windows isn't necessarily doing it, but yeah, there could be something that's third party that's trying to steal focus.
Yep.
I don't know what else might be installed on there. I mean, I've run VS 2013 for a while. I've not seen it attempting to steal focus, but I'd want to see what happens, you know, if you kill off VS 2013 and you start it up again, is it going to do it again immediately?
Yeah.
What other types of hooks are installed on there? Do you have, say, what's it called? You know, mouse without borders. Do you have something that is designed to hook your input and then steal focus and then bring back focus?
So I can tell you the majority of the time that I've seen something like this, what happens is if I Alt-Tab, there's like a dialog box in the background that's related to it.
Right.
And I just didn't see it because I clicked on the thing and gotten focused back in the main app.
Right.
And so that was usually my problem. All right, from Daniel, I'm a big fan of the show. We're a big fan of you, Daniel. And hoping you can help me diagnose the problems with an i7 512 gigabyte Surface Pro 3 I have. The device is getting multiple bug check errors. They seem to be related to when the device is going into active standby or hibernation or waking from these states. When it's being actively used, there's no issues, but it happened, and it doesn't happen every single time. At first, I thought it was related to Hyper-V, so I did a refresh of Windows, and this time I did install the Windows Phone tools with Visual Studio, and still does not have Hyper-V enabled. The most common cause by address is NTOS kernel exe 153 CA.
Memory dumps.
Okay.
Just share them out, the full memory dump out of C, Windows, stick it up on SkyDrive, zip it up first, and I'll take a look.
Okay.
Unfortunately, cool. Not enough. You can try looking for updates, you know, the standard stuff, but we haven't had a large number of these types of issues show up.
All right. From Tom, hey, Gove, Larry, great show. Please do it more often. I'd do
We're trying.
I swear. I'm wondering if you're allowed to comment on the status of REFS, the Resilient File System. I've been using REFS formatted volume since it became available with no problems, but there seems to be no updates or announcements about it in a long time. Is it still in active development or has it been quietly shelved? Should I revert to NTFS?
Nope, it's still in active development. It just ships with the OS. So for something like file systems, we don't tend to push updates for it for existing operating systems unless there is a security or reliability problem. So the fact that it's working well for you is a good thing. And we're just, you know, improving it, and you'll probably see it with more improvements with Windows 10.
Okay, cool. From Philip, how come build 9879 is online but not available even when with fast selected for preview downloads?
Did you get it through a torrent? '79 has, as far as I know, not been announced yet as the next flighted build. It is our next flighted candidate build, and it is available internally, but I don't know if it's available externally yet. By the time the show airs, it will probably be available externally.
Well, that's
and you shouldn't
awkward.
Have an issue.
Okay, so there you go. From Cedric, I repurposed a computer and therefore decided to remove the SSD hosting the system, Windows 8.1, and use a standard hard drive instead to use the SSD in another more active computer. To do so, I cloned sector by sector the SSD on the traditional hard drive and then removed the SSD from the computer. The system works fine, but I can't defrag it because in Windows' opinion, it's still a active SSD drive. I check the drive's properties, I check the disk management, I check the device manager, I check the defrag command line, but nowhere can I find a way to tell Windows, hey, this drive is an SSD, please don't rtrim and please do defrag.
Run a WinSAT full assessment on the system and then you should get defrag working again.
Wow, there you go. All right, from Tim, often on my Windows 7 64-bit machines, the programs and features take so long to load up. I wanted to make sure I got his question just as he wrote it. Here is a post I wrote many moons ago that no one ever has helped with. I've seen this on a number of Windows 7 machines, don't know why. You said, how many apps are installed? And Tim said 163.
That's a lot. It's really a lot of apps. So when you open up the Programs and Features dialog, we attempt to enumerate everything that is installed. And not only do we do that, but we also calculate the size of everything that is installed.
Yeah.
That takes a long time. The more apps that you have installed, the larger the apps that are installed. It has to go through all of the components, figure out where everything is associated with that application, go dig it out, go run through and get the size of every folder and every subfolder that that app has. So if you have hundreds, or in this case 163 applications, all relatively large, all with multiple subfolders, multiple components, it will take a long time to enumerate the Programs and Features folder.
Yeah, I've noticed that, and it's usually like I'll have a machine that's just, it's up and running for years, right? And then it takes forever for that. And that's why, you know, it kind of helps to pave the system once in a while for me.
Yeah, paving the system.
You can uninstall them too. But.
Yeah, on an, every now and again, right, especially on a power user system, you go, you download utilities, you update those utilities, you try out software, then you abandon it, games.
And you forget to uninstall it.
You just forget to install it. Go through every now and again, house clean. You don't necessarily have to repave the system, but it is good to go through and figure out, well, what do you actually use on here?
Yeah,
right?
Is there a utility that'll tell you all the apps that you have installed and when the last time you used them is?
It'll tell you when the date that you installed them is through the Programs and Features.
I do sort by that quite a bit, but I'd like to know, when's am I going to use QtFTP again? Probably not. I could probably install it again when I need it.
That's right.
I use it so infrequently, so... Mm-hmm.
That's the other really good thing about cleaning stuff is that if you can forget about, or if you've forgotten about stuff that you've used, and then you uninstall it, by the time you need it again, there'll be a newer version.
Yeah.
It'll probably work better.
All right, from Gad, love the show. Did not miss a one from the beginning. I keep it handy and indexed in my video library. Thank you. That's very kind of you. To install Windows Media Player support on Windows 7N, you have to download the Media Feature Pack, KB968211, and install it. I have to deploy just the WMF component from the package to many computers over a very slow WAN. So bandwidth and size are crucial factors. The target computers are standalone and standalone units, and they don't participate in a domain. The size of the full Windows Media Support package is 300 meg, and most of the components in it are not required, like the sample videos, the Media Center, and many others. Is there a way to disassemble the package and reassemble just the needed components? That way I'll be able to send just a minimum package over the wide area network. Any other ideas to solve the problem is welcome to.
Unfortunately, there's no way of separating out the package unless you're using something like Windows Embedded.
Yeah.
Or what is it called now? Windows Industry Edition, mm-hmm. I think they call it. Anyways, the version where you get to customize the image to exactly what you want.
Yeah.
That's the only method of being able to pull together those particular pieces. Now, the other problem is that you're running Windows 7 version, like the N version, which is just bad on so many levels anyways.
Yeah.
The best idea that I can think of is if you can have more locality for those pieces. So if you can move that the whole package to someplace that is more local to those machines geographically, mm-hmm. Then maybe you wouldn't have to use the WAN link necessarily yeah. to pull it. You could use something like SkyDrive or Dropbox or what have you in order to pull that down, or a shared server somewhere in that vicinity and have it pull from that shared server. You could do that via scripting links as well. You know, if you can copy up the package and then push out a script to each of the machines and have those machines then pull from that central location. So rather than pushing to install, you get a pull to install method.
Okay.
Unfortunately, that's the best that I can come up with because that package can't be broken up.
Yeah, okay. All right, pick of the week time. Pick of the week. And Gove, here's one for you. Using Bing for technical instant answer and automated solutions.
Hey, this puts me out of a job. I'll be impressed.
You wish. So what do we got here?
So you're going to Bing, and apparently it's getting a little bit more updated with trying to figure out what you want. Mm-hmm. So I guess if we go to Bing, let's see if we can replicate it. Windows Update Troubleshooter. Ta-da!
Very nice.
Yeah. And it even tells you, you know, for which OS that you might want to do something different. Hopefully, let's see, what would you type in as an end user? Would you actually type in Windows Update Troubleshooter? I wouldn't. How about Windows Update doesn't work?
Yeah, give that a shot.
Although,
see if it does the autocorrect too, huh?
Right. Windows Update. One word. No, two words. Doesn't. I am hitting space. It does not do that, huh? Looks like we have some feedback in order to have them work with a more natural language.
Good thing we know people.
Yeah, it's a good thing that we know people.
All right.
Because I don't know if you'd really use Troubleshooter.
Yeah.
You know, if all they're going for is, you know, Windows troubleshooting, no. How about Windows application troubleshooting? So we can get one answer with Windows Update troubleshooting, and it takes you to that Windows Update. So it's yeah. interesting. I wonder if you have to have the title match up with specific articles yeah. on the Windows Update. So you know what, folks?
It's early on, though. So.
Here's my call to action for you guys. For the places on Microsoft.com where we actually have answers for something, okay? If you're doing a Bing search and you can find that article, but it would be a better user interface as being, you know, actually showing up the actual steps directly in Bing, mm-hmm. hit us a line on that and we can route it to these folks and get them to improve their responses more.
Cool. All right, and next is download free Excel templates to manage time, money, and productivity. This is a Lifehacker post I thought was kind of interesting. And you can download a bunch of different Excel spreadsheets that help make you a spreadsheet ninja.
Or at least managing your
at least be more your productive.
Money. Yeah.
So there you go. Try this out and see what you think. I downloaded a couple of them, played around with them. It's kind of interesting.
I remember making these in university.
Yeah.
Trying to figure out, you know, if I put this towards student loans mm-hmm. and if I put this into savings, you know, how would it affect my end end result. And I remember making these types of spreadsheets, although it was never nearly this pretty.
Yeah, yeah, that's the cool thing. I downloaded a couple of them and tried them out just because they are so pretty. So pretty, it was kind of interesting. All right, and
I
the last
Excel
one.
I think Excel was pretty underrated for the end user. Yeah. Like it's heavily, heavily used in the enterprise, and we all know that. But I think for the stuff that it can do for yourself, like making just lists or making monthly budgets, yearly budgets, it's very underrated. And being able to show that visually and change over time, right? Like that's one of the strengths of Excel. But I don't think that we do enough of making it valuable to the consuming user.
I use it for so many things, and one of the things I really like it for
You're not a consumer, though.
Well, I know, but still, I am a consumer, too. But one of the things I really like, one of my favorite spreadsheets that I have, share your favorite spreadsheets with us. We'd like to hear what they are. But one of my favorites at home is because I have, like, 50 hard drives in my house. I have an Excel spreadsheet that tells when's the last time I used them, is it, you know, critical data, is it backed up, if so, where. And then the totals of the drive sizes that kind of add together, and then I've got a bunch of different formulas that add everything up, so I can keep track of like my I don't know what you'd call it, but like my total footprint for hard drive space I need to back up. What is that? And I don't know what it is, like 8 terabyte or something. But for that, that spreadsheet is just like critical. I use it all the time, especially when I'm getting ready to do my my backups and stuff.
Do you also use it to help figure out, and here's an idea for you.
Okay.
Help track when during the year hard drives become cheapest so that you can go look at either a yearly or every couple of year cycle on upgrading your drives, space for and your reliability, and start rotating out your older drives so that you can reduce the number of drives that you have, reduce the total power consumption that you have in your house. Opt for larger drives, larger, cheaper, more reliable drives where their MTBF is now much, much higher.
And I then, should do that.
And then you can do
I
that
just
all
like to browse PriceWatch anyway. So I'm on there all the time anyway. So I just kind of keep an eye out on hard drives.
The thing with buying hard drives is buy in bulk. Because you can find the folks that will say, you know what, for 10 drives, you know, you'll save.
10 drives. This is Gove's house, 10 drives.
10 drives was my last order, man.
Yeah. So, no, I'm not really buying 10 drives at a time.
But it works out.
And the other nice thing about that, too, is you know you're getting exactly the same drives. Mm-hmm. They're paired. They probably came from the same batch. So I do see the benefits that you have
there. There are also some pitfalls of getting that, too. So if you get 10 drives all from exactly the same batch, one drive starts to fail.
You have no confidence in the other nine?
The confidence goes down in my other nine. So when I buy, when I try to buy them in bulk, I will try to ensure that they come from different lots.
Yeah.
They'll be the same drive, the same model, but different lots. So, you know, space them out by 100 or so units so that they're not all from the exact same, they're not sequential in the same line.
The IT administration in your house sounds like a nightmare.
No, because I'm the IT manager.
All right.
If I had to share the responsibilities, that would be a nightmare.
Yeah. All right. And so the last one, I'm glad you were so big on Excel today, because the last one is an Excel thing that I saw on Reddit that cracked me up. So this is a person who is on a lockdown machine at work.
Supposedly locked down.
Supposedly locked down. Won't let them run anything. They just want to watch a video. So they've got this Excel spreadsheet that they made that allows you to watch a video in it.
So they take advantage of OLE, object linking and embedding in Excel. Something you got to remember about Excel and Office in general is you could almost call it its own operating system. It's it's essentially its own Turing machine. Because there is so much that you can do within the Office products by pulling in components from outside. And depending on how you lock down the system, it says, oh yeah, this is Excel, so I'm gonna allow anything with Excel to run. Well, unfortunately or fortunately, Excel has the ability to embed other applications within it by as DLLs. So you can load up MSHTML control to watch to view a web page. You can load up the Windows Media Player control. All the ActiveX controls basically you can load into IE, you can load into Excel in very much the similar manner and take advantage of whatever it is that they're doing. It's kind of why I said the supposedly locked down machine.
Yeah.
Because there are absolutely ways of locking this stuff out.
Well, the other part of this too is they're running an application to monitor the person, see what application they're in most of the time.
Right.
And so, Excel. They're in Excel 98% of the time. And so there you have it.
They just morphed Excel into being their Explorer.
Yeah.
Right? Like they just changed their shell essentially to Excel. And yes, you can do that. It's cumbersome, but you can circumvent the system in that manner. Don't expect that you won't get found out because it's trivial to monitor this as well.
Yeah, and see what's the Excel spreadsheet they're in. Oh, mediaplayer.xls. Oh, okay.
So, or more like viewing what components are loaded in the process.
Yeah. Yeah, so there are ways to get around that. But it reminds me of Jurassic Park. Life will find a way in the workplace. Entertainment will find a way. So
I was going to say laziness will find a way.
I almost went with laziness. So I was like, no, entertainment. And the other thing to keep in mind, too, is that you probably do have a phone. So
right.
There's all kinds of methods to keep yourself busy. Or you could work. That's another thing.
I prefer, you know, if I ever had a business that had employees like that, yeah. I would much prefer simply trusting my employees and giving them the ability to relax and not have to sneak around. Because what it is that they're doing, if they're spending 90% of their time goofing off, and well, they're not helping you, they're not being productive. Whereas if you just told them, hey, look, we trust you,
yeah,
but we expect a certain amount of output.
Let's get stuff done, and then we'll all watch a movie together. Or
right, like
at lunch
give them the ability to have flexible time for relaxation.
Yeah,
and you wouldn't have to worry about this kind of stuff.
Yeah,
or at least not as much.
Yeah. All right, so that is the show for this week. If you have questions, if you have comments, leave them on the show page, or you can send us an email at defragshow@microsoft.com, and we will see you next week. I hope
next week. Yeah.
Yeah.
Take care.